You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you as we continue to kind of recap what we saw in Indy as well as handle some other business. Buck, what's going on, man?
No, not too much. I mean, it's exactly what you're talking about. As we're nearing free agency frenzy, you're trying to kind of put together like how teams are thinking when it comes to weighing what's available in free agency versus what's available in the draft. And now it should help us kind of crystallize what is going to take place, particularly when we start doing these mock drafts.
Yeah, no doubt. We're later on this episode, we will do the AFC South, which I think finishes up the AFC for all the building blocks, kind of looking at the key players for them to build with going forward. So that'll wrap up the AFC next week. I believe on our Monday episode, we're just going to jet through the whole NFC. So the building blocks for all the NFC teams, we wanted to get that done as free agency launches, just kind of so we can have a clear before and after picture after free agency to see what kind of changes got made there. So be on the lookout for that next week. We're going to go through the defense today, what we saw at the combine. But you led me somewhere where I wanted to go because you talked about marrying the draft and free agency. And I was talking to somebody. We're talking about all the positions and, you know, with a personnel executive. We're talking about the running backs. And he's like, look, he kind of is with us in terms of like, I want young backs. Like, you don't want veteran backs. But he said, this year is such a unique year. He was like, there's five. He said, I might go through five veterans free agents this year before I would get to the first draftable running back. Like free agency in the running back class is actually pretty loaded of guys. If you can get them on like 2-year mm-hmm. deals, you know, Josh Jacobs, you know, Derrick Henry on a 2-year deal. You know, I think like Antonio Gibson, you've got Pollard. There's a ton of them. So he was like, the free agency is a better way to go this year than drafting these running backs. They're better football players. I thought that was kind of interesting.
The conversation actually makes sense, DJ, when you look at the veterans that are on the market. Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs, Tony Pollard. They're really good running backs that have been feature backs in this league, but they're not quite too old that you can't envision them being a feature back for another year or two. And because there's so many guys that are hitting the market at the same time, I don't think you really have to worry about the cost kind of rising up. If anything, it's going to depress the value of the running backs on the market because you can bid against, hey, if you don't take it, I'm giving this money to the first guy that says yes. And so you can wait, but we know the money's not going to go up for the veteran running back. To me, it's kind of a win-win for teams. You get a really good player, and then you can draft a player at a later round and really take care of the position without really kind of messing up your pocketbook.
Yeah, it feels like this is like a, you know, veteran running backs. Once you get to the second contract, to me, I think you just go in 2 years at a time. You know, like, mm-hmm. hey, sign you up for 2 years, and we'll just keep going these little 1 and 2 year deals. I don't want to go beyond that because when you fall off, it happens fast, and I don't want to be stuck holding the bag mm-hmm. here. So 2 years to me is reasonable, and I think that's what those players and those teams should be trying to get done. And look, you dress it up, you can dress it up as a 4 or 5 year deal, but there's going to be an out after year two. would be my guess with a lot of these veteran running backs. But I think it's, it again is another example of how you got to stack your board and understand what free agency looks like, and then what the draft looks like informs, you know, the direction you go in free agency. So I think that's just something to keep an eye on here with these running backs. Any other connections you think from this draft class, free agency?
I think free agency at wide receiver. I think when you look at the market, like now that we've seen the franchise tag applied and we see that Michael Pittman is no longer on the market, Mike Evans signed a deal. Look, teams are going to look at Calvin Ridley's at the top of the board. Gabe Davis is one of the guys that'll be up there. And now the decision that you're weighing is, do I want to pay the veteran over $20 million or do I want to roll the dice on a rookie draft pick? And that is going to have some sway in terms of how much money these veterans get. But yeah, I absolutely believe that when we're doing the juggling act between free agency and the draft, because there's so many really good wide receivers in this class, I think you will see the free agent value kind of shrink for some of the wide receivers that were expecting to get like a hefty payday. I don't know if those paydays are going to be out there. And I think a lot of people will say, yeah, we'll bypass that to go back and see if we can develop a young quarterback. And I think we'll see more teams opt to kind of cycle through young wide receivers in the next few years, because now the prospect of paying a wide receiver $30 million quarterback money is going to drive teams to say, look, we can save some of this money for some of these other marquee positions, because right now, the one thing we know every year, college is producing a ton of pass catchers that can play right away.
Yeah, I think, you know, T. Higgins is another one, right? He got tagged real early on in the process. So I think on the wideouts, you talked about the cost. I think it makes sense two things. Number one, I'm gonna re-sign my own guys. You know, you're gonna pay a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna do it on everything I know about a guy, right? So I'm not gonna take a $22 to $24 million risk with a free agent from another team and wonder how he learns my system and how he fits in with my quarterback. But if I've got, you know, Michael Pittman or I've got T. Higgins, I'm going, okay, I know what he is. I know how my quarterback feels about him. Like, I'd be more comfortable scratching that check versus going out and paying big money to a free agent to come in when I could just draft a guy. Like, to me, if you're going to get a guy that's unknown, so to speak, within your building, I think I would rather roll the dice and take one. Literally in the second round, there's going to be a ton of good players here. It costs you nothing versus going out and spending top dollar on somebody else's player that you're not familiar with, Buck.
It makes total sense to me, DJ. It makes a lot of sense to look at it. And a lot of it depends on how comfortable are you with developing young receivers? Do you have a wide receiver coach? Do you have a system that is easy to digest for young players to kind of have success right away? If you feel good about those factors, yeah, the young receiver is the way to go, because you talk about it. I mean, just look at what the Green Bay Packers have been able to do with all their young cheap receivers. They don't have a lot of money allocated to the wide receiver room. They now can write a big, big check to Jordan Love and not have to worry about it kind of tipping the scales on their team when it comes to how they allocate the rest of the cash for the defense and those things. At some point, they're going to have to pay one of those receivers, you know, maybe two. But right now, for the next 3 years, they got a bunch of young, cheap playmakers that are going to be able to get it done, and allows you a lot of flexibility to build up other parts of your team.
Are you as surprised as I was with the Christian Wilkins news? Like, I know that they're over the cap, and I know they have to do some roster management. I know they have to pay Tua. I get all those things. But, like, what's harder to find than a defensive tackle that can rush the quarterback and is a dominant player? Like, to me, that's one of the hardest things to find. I was shocked. I talked to a GM last week, and we're talking about the free agent market, and he's like, yeah, you know, we were hopeful that maybe one of these DTs would get, you know, get to the market. Now, Chris Jones hasn't been tagged. Technically, he could get to the market, but all the expectation is that the Chiefs are going to clear the decks in order so they can get that deal done before we get to free agency. But the Christian Wilkins thing shocked me, man. And I think the market for him, he is going to break the bank because so many teams have money, and it's hard to find one of those now.
The thing that's surprising me about him hitting the market, it's not the thing that's surprising, but if I'm a team, like, the only thing I would have to put a phone call in, like, why are they letting him out? What is it that we don't know? You know, like, what is the surprise at the bottom of the Cracker Jack box that we're going to get that is going to get it? Because otherwise it doesn't make sense. Based on his performance between the lines, it doesn't make sense that you would let a guy who has played at a high level inside as an inside pass rusher get on the market, I would have to put in a phone call just to see, is there something behind the scenes that we don't know? Because it certainly doesn't make sense for a young, athletic, productive playmaker like him to hit the market.
Yeah, no, I don't understand it. So I know one thing, he is going to get paid handsomely out there on the free market. Let's go through the combine here, Buck. Different positions, guys that stood out. Let's start the corner position where, look, Quinyon Mitchell, I just updated my top 50 list. That should be out tomorrow. Moved him up a few spots. He's my 13th overall player out of Toledo. But you can make a case. I still have Terrion Arnold as my number one corner. He's number two for me. I have no fault with anybody who says after Quinyon Mitchell, watching him at the Senior Bowl, watching him work out, he ran 4.33 at 195 pounds, Buck. I mean, I have no problem with somebody saying he's a top corner in the draft. I couldn't fight you on that.
Look, it's hard to dispute it. When you go back and you look at the way that he played at Toledo, you look at the consistent production and performance that he displayed during his time there. You watch how he competed at a high level at the Senior Bowl. He eliminated any doubts you had, any doubts that you were concerned about when it came to his level of competition and how he would fare against the best of the best. He took that away. He then goes to the combine, knocks it out the box with the testing, height, weight, speed, check, 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 check. You then see the movement skills and all the other stuff. There's not a lot that you can poke holes at. Now it's just a matter, are you willing to pull the trigger? Are you willing to pull the trigger on a guy from Toledo when we are so, I would say, obsessed, or we really focus on brand names? I mean, look, he's about as good as they come at corner. We've seen it in a bunch of different ways. And so, yeah, I can understand why you'd be compelled to put him at the top of the chart.
Yeah, no, he had a phenomenal workout. Look, Nate Wiggins ran 4.28, but he was 173 pounds, man. So it's like, as excited as you get about the 4.28, which we all knew he was going to fly, 173 pounds was bizarre. You know, he was supposed to be 185, 188. He shows up at 173, which was a little bit odd there.
Sometimes, if he's leaning into the track background, a lot of times what you do is you'll cut weight so you can run faster, right? You're lighter and you're faster. I think the bigger thing, and this is why it's important for scouts on school calls, remember how we used to go to the strength coach and just ask, hey, what's a good weight on him? Because I want to know what's his regular season weight? Because then I would be able to have an understanding of, hey, did he cut weight to run fast? Or is this what he always has been, and this is where he's going to kind of, when he shows up to minicamp, he's going to be 175 pounds. Because what happened to him at the workout is what you're fearful of happening to him in the league. He's not going to be able to finish. He's going to be hurt. So I would give him a check for running fast, but then the questions would be, is it going to be a concern going forward with his durability and his toughness when it comes to tackling?
That was kind of the concern. That was the question mark on him. I'll give you a couple other ones here. I'll just go through a list of a few guys I thought were interesting. I mentioned just a second ago, Rake Straw ran 4.51 at 183 pounds. I wish he was a little bit bigger, wish he was a little bit faster, but the tape is really good. I still think he's kind of late one, maybe early two in that range. Kamari Lassiter didn't run the 40, but had a phenomenal field workout. A couple other guys that I want to highlight here. Max Melton from Rutgers is kind of acing every test, Buck. Ran 4.39. He can play inside, can play outside. Another one to me that really helped himself, Mikey Samerstill from Michigan, who the question was the size of speed. 182 pounds at 5.093, but ran 4.47. I think it was big for him to get in the 4.4s.
Yeah, really big for him. Those two last guys that you talked about, the Rutgers kid, what you like about him is you talk about checking the boxes along the process. I also like the fact that he was coached by Greg Schiano. We can say a lot of things about Greg Schiano. Greg Schiano coached DBs at the NFL level, so he knows how to develop defensive backs. We've seen a number of Rutgers players come into this league and have success. So I feel really good about what he's been able to put on display. And I would, you know, you talk about standing on the table for him. I'll stand on the table for him. When it comes to Sandersill, you talk about small in terms of 5'9", but the speed is everything because, man, if he was small and then he had a 4.5 time, it just makes it harder to sell in the building. Yeah. But because he's a true nickel corner, because we have on like game tape, the way that they're able to utilize him in a variety of different ways and how, I mean, I think you can make the argument that he might have been the leader in the back end in terms of like how he got it done, when they needed to make plays, all that other stuff. I feel great about those two guys. And part of the process when it comes to the combine is being able to just continue to check the boxes and make sure that what I saw on tape is believable with each of those guys and some of the other ones that you've mentioned. you feel great about the overall evaluation because the consistency has been there when it comes to their performance and their athletic potential and traits.
So production, 6 picks for Sammer still. Leadership, all the stuff you hear is off the charts. This one was interesting to me. 18 Michigan players there, right? So I talked to a team that asked every Michigan player who was the leader of the team. And he said it wasn't unanimous, but it was close to unanimous that it was Mikey Sammer still. Like offense, defense didn't matter. They all pointed to him. So I'm like, you add that stuff up together. And it's like, I know he's a little bit small, but I know where he plays. I've seen him play in that role. I've seen him as a blitzer. I've seen him tackle. I've seen him take the ball away. He's a good football player, man. So I was tempted. I was tempted to put him at 50 on my list. And I was like, okay, nah, he's a traditional third round pick. Like that's what that profile says. This is a third round guy. But when you add it all up, if somebody took him with the 45th pick, it wouldn't surprise me.
No, not in the role, because that nickel position is the 12th starter. You're counting on a starting quarterback, a starting player. And that nickel position, you talked about the leadership ability. I actually like hearing that because there's a lot of communication that takes place playing in the slot. You're half linebacker, half defensive back. You're asked to do a lot of different things, whether it's blitzing, whether it's being a solid edge setter in the run game, all of that other stuff. I like the high IQ. I like the instincts. But the leadership ability is another feather in his cap when it comes to the evaluation.
Safeties. I'll give you a couple names here. The interesting one to me, I thought it helped himself a ton, was Javon Bullard from Georgia. Mm-hmm. He was 5'10", 498 pounds, ran 4.47. One who, again, talking to teams to interview stuff, he crushed. Cam Kitchens, I wish he would have ran faster. He ran a 4.65. It's very, very similar to Jair Brown and his situation coming out of Penn State last year. They ran a similar time. Jair Brown ended up going a little bit later than we would have thought, and he ended up playing really good football for the 49ers last year. Newbin did not run from Minnesota. Most teams view him as the top guy, but there is speed, athleticism concern there. I'll give you three names real quick, or actually I'll give you four names that I thought really, really helped themselves in the safety pile. And again, these guys are all clumped together. But Cole Bishop from Utah ran 4.45. I didn't know he had that in him.
Oh, yeah.
Kalen Bullock ran high 4.4s from SC. That's not a surprise. Dominic Hampton's a personal favorite of mine from Washington, like third round type. He's 215 pounds, ran 4.51. And then the other Georgia safety, Tyke Smith, he ran 4.46, 202 pounds. So, well, I don't think there's a first round safety in the bunch. I'm not so sure we even see one in the top of the second round. But I think there's that clump of guys that we just went through right there, 5, 6, 7 guys. I think we see a run on those probably the latter part of day two. So you're talking about that third round. I think you're going to see all these safeties go.
Added part of it will be special teams value. If they're talking about making the changes to the kickoff return rule, where that's more in play, well, now we bring those things up in the evaluation. Before, it had to become, hey, man, you need to be able to play and play well at your position. I think now you have a little more flexibility in being able to do it. DJ, the funny thing about the safeties this year and in previous years, the ball production, just the number of interceptions that we're seeing from the safety class in general, you just feel better about it. There were years, man, we'd get guys who had one or two interceptions for their career. Now we're seeing guys, you talk about Newbin at the top of the board, he has 13 interceptions. Bullock having, I think he has 7 interceptions during his time at USC. You're seeing more guys get their hands on the football. And in a league that where turnovers are really coveted and they're the biggest determining factor in who wins and loses games, you guys have to be able to have the ball skills and the range to turn it over. I mean, it's necessary. You got to tackle, but you got to be able to take the ball away.
No doubt. Let's get to the linebackers here. Trevin Wallace from Kentucky at 237 pounds, running 4.51, was huge. Cedric Gray from North Carolina ran 4.64, which is still a solid time. Taller linebacker, 6'1 and change, 6'1 and a half there. A couple other ones I'll highlight for you here real quick. Olo Fashio from Washington. He's interesting. 6004, 236, ran 4.56. Really productive. Man, I watched one of the Oregon games where he just ran over Bucky Irvin, got a sack in that game. Anyway, he's like a third round type dude. And the other one that I like that I've got some teams that have come around on him because they weren't necessarily feeling this guy early on. And I'm like, dude, what am I missing? This guy's twitched up and explosive. Like, I don't know. But Jordan McGee goes out there from Temple, and he's a little undersized, 228 pounds, but he's 6013, 6'1 3/8". He ran 4.55, and he's a little bit tight butt buck, but super, super twitchy and makes some plays. So again, as we're going through the defensive positions, safeties, linebackers, like those guys don't, you know, that list of guys I just mentioned don't blow you away. That's that middle tier at the top. Edgerrin Cooper still to me is the top guy. He ran 4.51 at 230 pounds. Peyton Wilson was awesome from NC State. He ran 4.43. He was flying. And then Junior Colson from Michigan weighed in but didn't run. So whatever order you want to have Peyton Wilson or Edgerrin Cooper, I think I'm cool with. I had a Cooper Wilson just, you know, factored in the injury stuff. But I think those feel like the top three guys to me.
Yeah, it's the Peyton Wilson thing. When you look at the production, I mean, you just see it, man. His stat sheet just it falls off the page. It's so much stuff that he has, and sacks and tackles lost, interceptions, forced fumbles, all those things. You see a guy that plays hard. He's always around the ball. For him to test like he tested, that was remarkable. But the thing that stood out to me, DJ, was when you guys were showing him run around and then they popped into old high school wrestling tape.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hey, bad man. That made me, I put a little gold star in my thing. I was like, oh, this dude is really about it. He helped himself. The medical would be everything. But DJ, when I look at him, I'm like, man, you just think about the linebackers that have played in this league. And I know we had him come on. I'm not saying he's in the same category, but
he likes Luke Kuechly and he looks like Luke Kuechly. There's no way to avoid it, man. Yes. I'm sorry. I don't like comparing guys to Hall of Famers, but I'm like, that's his guy. I mean, and Luke has met with him. Luke texted me. He texted me during the combine. He was happy for the kid. He really likes him. He's got a chance to meet him and get to know him a little bit.
But DJ, you had those vibes, right? Like he, like, I mean, the way he's serious, but he can turn that thing on. And, the athleticism, it really comes down to the medical. Cooper is also fine. Talk about sideline to sideline player, all that other stuff checks
long
out.
Long rangy.
But yeah, but the guy I think that made the most noise, I think Peyton Wilson made the most noise because I don't know if anybody expected him to test like he tested.
Man, I mean, he's almost 6'4", 233 pounds, ran 4.43. I have him as my 40th player. I moved him up a little bit. But I mean, you tell me right now that he's got a clean bill of health and you tell me he went with the 21st pick. I get it. I get it. He plays like that. So that's the linebacker group. We go to the DTs, Buck. Byron Murphy, we told everybody when they listened to us that he was going to roll. He ran 4.87 at 297 pounds. You know, he's just 6 foot, 6.04, so 6 foot and a half there. Not the biggest guy in the world, but super, super twitched up and explosive. Johnny Newton did not run. From Illinois. Fisk continued his assault on the offseason. He was 292 pounds, ran 4.78. And then I'll tell you a couple other guys that tested really well. You got Mekhi Wingo from LSU, who's 284 pounds, undersized, ran 4.85. Chris Jenkins, we knew was going to roll. He ran 4.91. Ororo ran 4.89 from Clemson. He's one of those guys I've got kind of highlighted that I got to go back and do more on. I didn't love him as a player, but man, he's 6'4", 294, ran 4.89. So more work to do on him. The one that I did add from the group to the top 50 that wasn't in it, the only new name that I have in the top 50 was Mason Smith from LSU. Just because you're watching all these guys, they're all 6 foot, 6'1", 6'1", 6'2", and all of a sudden now you got this 6'5", 300-pound dude comes up there, and I'm like, okay, he's different than everybody else. And that's like big-time recruit coming out of high school, big freshman year, then got hurt his knee, wasn't the same guy. But I'm like, man, if you're a defensive line coach, you've been around those guys. Like, this is the kind of guy they want to work with.
Absolutely the kind of guy they want to work with. Man, you talk about big, physical, long, has the physical dimensions that you want to work with. And you talk about being a big-time recruit. That talent is there. Now, can you cultivate it? Can you get it out of him? But you're certainly intrigued by just what he brings to the table as an athlete.
Yeah, no doubt. And then edge rushers here real quick. Dallas Turner ran a 4.46, a little bit shorter than I thought at 6.026, but 247 with freaky length, like freaky, freaky length and wingspan. Jared Verse, super explosive, ran a 4.58. Latu did everything he needed to do at 259 pounds, ran 4.64. Chop Robinson put on a show as we said he would. He ran 4.48 at 254 pounds. Darius Robinson ran 4.95 at 285. And then I had Marshawn Nealon in my top 50. He ran a 4.75 at 267 with like 34-inch arms. So he's a good-looking kid as well.
Yeah, DJ, you know what's so interesting about these edge rushers? Like we talked about there not being a Myles Garrett in the group, but they're just a lot of guys that have intriguing attributes. We talked about the top three, and those top three, I think it comes down to like what you really want. What do you want to play with? How are you kind of stacking your defense? But there are some interesting guys like in the later ranks, like we talked about at the East-West Shrine game, Muhammad Kamara from Colorado State.
Yeah, dude, he's interesting, man.
Richie. You know, DJ sack production had 13 sacks, was co-defensive player of the year in the Mountain West. First step quickness you saw at the East-West Shrine game.
He ran 4.57, Buck.
Yeah,
4.57.
Yeah, and now you see him put it up. He's a guy that's of interest, and we've seen it. And I think I'm learning my lesson from watching Byron Young from the L.A. Rams kind of pop, and you would see him on tape and see the first step quickness, but you're like, man, where does he fit? I think Kamara can have similar success around in the same round value in terms of being a third-round pick that can come and make plays.
Yep, I like it. And then a couple other interesting guys. Gabe Murphy, we talked about him before. You saw him at the East-West Shrine game. He ran a 4.68 at 247 pounds. He had 8 sacks last year. I liked him. Xavier Thomas, who's been at Clemson for 100 years, it seems like, but was a big-time recruit. He ran a 4.62 at 244 pounds, 6.022. Interesting player. And I thought the guy who, you know, one of the more interesting things that I saw from this group was Braylon Trice weighed in at 245. He must have cut close to 20 pounds. And ran a 4.72. So 4.72 is a solid time. I just thought it was interesting to me that he cut like that and obviously knew the question was the athleticism. And so he said, screw it. I'm just going to shave this weight and get out there and run the best I can possibly run.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's what people do. It is interesting. Like 20 pounds is a significant cut. And so what you have to do is you have to treat it as such. When you look at that time, you got to put almost an asterisk by it because it's certainly not his playing weight. It's not what he played at during the course of the year. So how much does it really matter? I don't know. Like we see people kind of do things like that during this time of year to make sure. And he probably won't weigh again. You know, it may not run again.
Or be at his pro day, he'll be 10 pounds heavier. But
that
shows me the guy cares. That shows me he cares because he knew what the questions were. And so he's like, that's fine. I'm going to run as fast as I can possibly run. So good for him doing that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. That is a wrap on the combine recap here. Again, if you missed the offense, we did that on the previous episode. You can go check that one out. But we are going to jump into, I believe it is the AFC South, if I'm not mistaken. We're going to look at their championship foundational pieces. We'll do that right after this. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up, picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all, but here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay, so you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs.
Yeah, like check out these hair. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, like John Cena got him. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't. Mm-hmm. You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but.
All right, so what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
But let's say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days. And take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, Buck, let's continue on this series. We've been doing this on the building blocks, the foundational pieces here for every single team in the NFL. This is going to finish up the AFC as we go to the South. And we start with the Houston Texans. This is a team in terms of a salary cap situation, very, very appealing. They have $70 million worth of space. That's fourth most in the NFL. They are armed with the 23rd pick, the 59th pick, and the 86th pick. That's where they're going to be in this draft. They've got some notable free agents, though. You've got Jonathan Greener, Devin Singletary, Noah Brown, George Fant, Steven Nelson, I should say, the little corner, Mighty Mouse. You've got Sheldon Rankins, the DT, and Blake Cashman, the linebacker. As we go through and look at their kind of key pieces, we'll go, it's hard as a rookie to get a blue, but they got a blue with C.J. Stroud at quarterback. So blue chip player, C.J. Stroud, he's a blue. Your three offensive playmakers, again, we got to fill all these different spots. So for their offensive playmakers, Nico Collins is a green, maybe headed towards a blue the way he played. Mm-hmm. Tank Dell is a yellow because of the, you know, coming off of the injury, but is really a green when he's healthy. Dalton Schultz, they just re-signed. He's a green. Laremy Tunsil, for their three offensive linemen, Tunsil's a blue. You get a yellow for Titus Howard / Shaq Mason there. You get a pink, which is a, you know, unproven younger player, but Kenyon Green and Juice Scruggs would compete for that spot. And then the pass rushers, you get two. They've got a green and Will Anderson Jr., a green and Malik Collins. Again, if they were to re-sign Greenard, he'd be in that mix. And then the defensive playmakers at the linebacker / secondary position, you get three spots. Petrie's a green. Singletary is a, I would argue he's better than a yellow here. We should get that one switched. Mm-hmm. He should be a green at least. And then defensive playmakers, the last one, Christian Harris, would be a pink here, but he's on his way to being a green, if not a green already as well.
Yeah, good young squad. The number one thing that they have is they got a blue chip quarterback in C.J. Stroud, and that makes it a lot easier to build a team around, to build a team up, because you have someone, a franchise player that you can build around. Nico Collins, you talked about being able to be a guy that could push for being a blue. We saw Tank Dell, and Tank Dell, prior to his injury, was playing like at a blue level for this team. Laremy Tunsil being there. And so, DJ, just from an offensive standpoint, there should be a lot of optimism around what this team could be with C.J. Stroud at the helm. And then with D'Amico Ryan's background and what he's been able to do quickly with this defense, they play hard, they get after it, they got a ton of money that they can throw at people. This team is going to be there. They're built to be around for the long haul. A lot of it is tied to the development of C.J. Stroud, but this team has a lot of intriguing young pieces, and I don't know if anybody thought that we would be talking about them so glowingly after what they looked like before last season.
Well, I just did a Ron Burgundy because you got misspelled words in here, and I just read them right out. I'm like, what the heck is Derek Singletary? I'm like, it's Derek Stingley. So Nabil, they got to come on, man. They got to fix that here. Derek Singletary Jr. I'm like, who the heck is Derek Singletary Jr.? I'm like, oh, it's Stingley. Nice. Anyway, so don't clip off that part, please. And send that out so I can hear from everybody about what a moron I am. But no, they've got a chance to have a bunch of blue dudes in this group because they got a bunch of greens that are going to graduate to blues here very quickly. You look at their last five first round picks: Stroud, Will Anderson, home run, Stingley Jr., home run, Kenyon Green, and Titus Howard, solid players, can be solid starters for them. So they're in good shape there in Houston. Let's get to Jacksonville. Jacksonville finished 9-8 last year. They are picking 17 and 48. And they're projected to have a third round comp pick as well. Salary cap wise, they have $24.6 million, which is 17th most in terms of space. You've got Calvin Ridley as the primary free agent there. They just released Darius Williams. They just released Rayshon Jenkins as well. So when we go and look at their foundational pieces, a lot of green here, Buck. So we need some greens to move up. Mm-hmm. But you've got Trevor Lawrence as a green. You've got Etienne as a green. Evan Ingram is a green. Christian Kirk is a yellow. I'm guessing that is, I'd have to get the explanation on that, why he's not a green. Maybe
because of the injury. Maybe just because of the injury, because he missed the last part of the year, but he should be a green for sure.
Yes. Brand Sheriff's a yellow. Cam Robinson's a yellow. Anton Harrison is a pink, is an unproven young player. Josh Allen, doesn't he have to be a blue, Buck? We lead the league in sacks. You got to be a blue.
Like, yeah, should be a blue.
So he should be a blue. Trayvon Walker's listed as a green. Oluokun is a green. Devin Lloyd's a green. And then the last defensive playmaker spot, Tyson Campbell or Andre Sisco, your choice would be a yellow. So it's just a team you know extremely well, Buck. What do you think?
I think it's a very accurate depiction of what the team is. I think the team is right at that line where they have to make a decision. Are they going to be good or are they going to be great? You have a lot of good players. Trevor Lawrence is a good player, hasn't consistently played at a level where you could call him a blue. Travis Etienne is a good player, but hasn't played at a blue level yet. I would say the best offensive players they have right now are Evan Ingram and Christian Kirk. Even though they wouldn't grade out as blues for this team, they play at a blue level because of the way that it's built. Worried about the offensive line. Brandon Scherff has struggled the last couple of years, injuries, age, and those things. You wonder what he's going to be able to do for them. And then Cam Robinson has been good, but he's been injured, dealt with suspensions, and so that's an issue. Defensively, you're looking for one of these guys outside of Josh Allen to emerge as a blue player. You're hoping that Trayvon Walker can be that blue player. You take someone number one overall, that's the expectation. So if they get Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker to play at a blue level, then they feel good. But the big issue for them is going to be in the back end. Who is going to be the star corner or safety that helps this team defend the elite offenses in the league? Tyson Campbell has been up and down. Andre Sisco has also been up and down. The hope is that in a new scheme that these players will finally maximize and reach their potential.
That's good stuff. Again, nobody knows this team better than Bucky. You go back to the last five first-round picks. Anton Harrison. Tackles, he played better than I thought he would. Honestly, I probably undergraded him a little bit. Trayvon Walker, Devin Lloyd, Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne. So that's kind of the foundation again for these guys going forward. Get to the Colts. Team was 9-8 last year. They pick 15, 46, and 82. They have $49.3 million in cap space. That's eighth most. Free agent wise, you've got Kenny Moore as a free agent. That's their biggest one there. They just announced that they had tagged Michael Pittman Jr. So he's in the fold here. We look at their key foundational pieces here. Again, you get a quarterback, three offensive playmakers, three quality O-line, two pass rushers, and three defensive playmakers. So the quarterback, Anthony Richardson, is a pink, is an unproven young player. Jonathan Taylor is a blue. He's a blue chipper. Michael Pittman Jr. is a green, which is a really good player. Josh Downs / Alec Pierce, they fall in the pink category. You've got Quentin Nelson as a green. You've got Bernard Raimann as a green. Ryan Kelly, I'm guessing probably for, you know, age maybe, age and injury as a center, is yellow. Quiddy Pay's a green. DeForest Buckner, I would argue, could still be a blue. He's listed as a green here. Zaire Franklin for the playmakers and EJ Speed are yellows, and Juju Brents / Jalen Jones are pinks.
Yeah, this is an interesting team, right? It's an interesting team because, DJ, they played really well under Shane Steichen in his first season. This is a team that I think, like, their effort and their toughness maybe masked some of their physical deficiencies. But the team is intriguing because of what we've talked about on the podcast previously, how Chris Ballard and staff, they decided to go after all guys with the prototypical traits, right? So what you have is a team of dynamic and explosive athletes. A lot of the guys that you name, they are those prototypical guys that you look for at the position. You think about Quentin Nelson. You think about Quiddy Pay and his athleticism. You think about DeForest Buckner and his height, weight, speed, his size, and all of the other guys that kind of man it from top to bottom. They are an interesting team because they're kind of going, I won't say against the trend, but what they're doing is they're supplying the coaching staff with a bunch of great athletes and asking the coaching staff, hey, turn these athletes into productive players. They've had success. It would be, I'm curious to see what this next class, what they add on top of what they already have. Do they stay down the same course, and how quickly can those first and second year players develop? Because the foundation is there for this team to make a jump. It's just a matter of, can the development happen quick enough for this team to play at a playoff level?
No doubt. Their last first round picks here with Chris Ballard, Anthony Richardson, Kwity Paye, Quentin Nelson, and Malik Hooker was his first one. By the way, Malik Hooker's ended up being a solid player for the Cowboys. So even that,
how about
one,
that?
I thought that, well, that was that? One I had a big grade on him. I needed him to do something. So I'm glad he's glad he's found a little something there with the Cowboys. All right. Tennessee Titans, last team in the division. They are coming off a 6-11 year. They have picks 7 and 38. So that's where they are in this draft. They have $75.8 million. Holy moly. In cap space. That is the third most. So they are in pretty good shape there. You got some free agents, Tannehill, Derrick Henry, Danico Autry is a good player. Aziz Al-Shaair, linebacker. So they've got some free agents out there. When you look at building blocks for them, offensively, the quarterback spot, Will Levis is pink unproven. Tajay Spears for the playmaker, pink unproven. DeAndre Hopkins, I'm guessing for age, is a yellow. And then you have Treylon Burks slash Okonkwo. Those are both pinks. So you don't have any blues there. Offensive line-wise, those three spots, Skoronski's a pink. You got Raidens and Dillard are yellows. And then you've got Petit or Jalen Duncan as pinks. So that offensively, Buck, that is not good. Defensively, Jeffrey Simmons, absolutely a blue. Harold Landry is a green. And then the playmakers in the back end, where there's a lot of work that needs to be done here. You've got Gibbons, McCreary, and Hooker. You've got two pinks and a green there.
Yeah, team
not good.
No,
it's not good.
Team squarely under construction. They're trying to rebuild it. Rand Carthon has his work cut out for him. They believe they have a young quarterback in Will Levis. They want to kind of build the team around what he is able to do. But this is a team that is in the middle of a flip, you know, a fixer-upper. And so the draft will be a big part of the equation when it comes to getting this team to catch up with the division rivals. They have to knock it out of the box. They got to make sure that they hit on their first 2 to 3 rounds and make sure that those guys become foundational pieces, because right now you just have a lot of question marks. You got players in those slots, but there are a lot of questions. They got to turn some of these pinks into eventual greens and blues for this team to get back to the top of the AFC.
They need some difference makers, man. Like, they don't have enough premier players. Like, they, you know, you talk about building out your depth and you're like, they need impact guys. So, you know, they've got a bunch of money to spend. They need to go out and at least get one of them, you know, one or two of them in free agency, not plug in, you know, not plug into the lineup type guys, but actual impact players. So that's on the to-do list there for Rand. Our buddy Rand Carthon's got some work to do here to get these guys up and running. Their last five first round picks, you've got Skoronski, Treylon Burks, Caleb Farley, Isaiah Wilson, Jeffrey Simmons. Hit a home run with Jeffrey Simmons in 2019, but they need more guys like him in this roster if they're gonna really try and catch up in a division with Houston, who's they're just on the diving board, man. They're just getting ready to bounce and even go even higher. You know, they're only gonna get better. You see Jacksonville, you know the talent on that roster. Indy's got a bunch of, you know, athletic freaks and you know, get a chance to keep their quarterback healthy. We'll see what they can do. But, man, they got a lot of work to do here in Tennessee this offseason.
Yeah, a lot of work to do. And, I mean, all these teams, like, there's not a clear-cut front runner. But I will say the Houston Texans are well-positioned to kind of put a vice grip on this division with this quarterback and with the young players that they have on defense. The other teams really got to get ready for the Texans because they're going to be there for a minute.
No doubt. All right, Buck, this has been a fun episode. We jammed a lot in here. But it's always great to catch up, man. Anything else you want to throw in here before we get out?
No, that's always fun, man. Like, coming out of the combine, getting ready for free agency, we can begin to already see how these teams are about to pop.
I would ask a favor of you. If you haven't already, man, we'd love a 5-star rating and a review if you can, wherever you listen to us. Just helps get the word out. This is the best time of year for us on this podcast. We get a lot of great feedback, a lot of texts from buddies in the league. Got a lot of feedback when we were in Indianapolis from folks both on the media side as well as the team side. So this is our favorite time of the year. Hope you guys can feel that and sense that. But we'd love it if you do us a solid and give us a little rating and review. We do appreciate it. All right, that's it. We'll see you next time right here on Move the Sticks. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days. And take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.